But cops OODA loop themselves on a daily basis.
Yeah.
You respond to a DV. Do I park in front of that house?
Yeah. No.
No. Why? Because if it goes bad, I have less time to observe, orient, decide, and act. Mm-hmm. Right? What if I park two houses down? Now, as I'm approaching, should I be running through like, hey, are the windows open? Is there anyone in a window? Is the door open? Any suspects? If it goes loud, where are my closest fallback points that are actually cover versus concealment? So now as I'm approaching already, I've already made those decisions if it has to happen, and I just got to act.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Shots Fired podcast. We are here in New York at the TACOPS Conference 2024. This is a fantastic event. We drug in Jay Wadsworth in here from EFC. We've had him on the show previously. You guys, most of you probably know him. We're going to get into his training curriculum and training all together in law enforcement and what we're doing, integrating the new training culture in law enforcement and what, Jay, you guys are doing. So thanks for popping in here. I know you're super busy at these events. You got a lot going on. So thanks for carving out a little bit of time. Before we do that, though, let's tell a little bit of everybody. You've been a part of TACOPS for a long time. We've been doing it now for a few years. Why do you come to these events and train here? And what's your take on it?
So first, I was an attendee years back, a newer member on the SWAT team. They were bringing me to do structure clearing courses, some basic courses for SWAT. And then as I was moving up in the ranks, I'd come and get my certifications through CTS or wherever as far as chemical munitions or flashbangs. So I was originally an attendee here. And in TACOPS, what they call North now, the NYTOA, was the original location that Larry had made. And I kept going to all these classes and I was like, man, no one is teaching like the jujitsu for police style that I had started teaching at our agency back west. So understanding, I was like, maybe I can get in and start teaching some jujitsu for police stuff, because it was like what I saw as a lack that the conference didn't have. And it was pretty new to the LEO realm altogether. So I kept emailing Larry over and over and bothering him like probably 2 or 3 years before he finally responded. He's like, all right, I'll give you a class. So he gave me a class, and then I'm like, I need mats. So I called up local high schools, got a high school to don't like bring mats over. And that was the first of the classes I taught here. So, and then it was a hit. Larry's brought me back every year, you know, kind of was like my first real like teaching outside of like my agency or outside of jujitsu gyms for like doing like jujitsu for police seminars. So forever grateful for NYTOA. This is the largest one. The vendor show is the largest one here. And they just put good stuff together and good content. You know, there's a lot of instructors and a lot of courses and a lot of SWAT stuff. So every year here, love it. And I'll be here every year he wants me to come.
Yeah, I agree. I think the unique thing about TACOPS and the NYTOA is the amount of instructors that they bring in from all over the country.
Yeah.
You know, we're from California, completely across the other side of the United States. And just the phenomenal training experience and the credibility and experience that a lot of the trainers have that come here. So we're telling you guys, if you guys haven't been to a conference, get signed up. There's 3 a year, actually adding on 4 next year.
Yep, 2025, Florida. There'll be 4. It's going to be Florida and Jacksonville.
Yeah,
and I think they're partnering with the Sheriff's Association down there.
Really? Yeah, so that's exciting. So if you're in the Florida area or anywhere down south, get signed up. It is truly a great event. We're here every year. So go to tacticalconference.com and get yourself signed up for one of the conferences. New York, Washington, D.C.,
Nashville,
and now Florida. So
and you know, besides just the content, it's like the networking, because saying he's bringing people in from all over the place, right? There's guys from Vegas coming in. There's guys from California coming in. So you're getting to network with people all across the country. I met you guys because of the conference, right?
Like,
we met at the conference, and that was like a few years back when you guys were new and you guys, you know, were like, hey, come on. And you helped us. And
who are these California boys?
You know, helped us get our name out there too when we were a new company as ESC. So like, you know, anything we can do to help each other when we have people that are like-minded, spreading good content and good information.
Yeah. Well, I think that leads into what we want to talk about. And that is, you guys are changing the culture of law enforcement with the training that you guys are doing with jiu-jitsu and combining DTAC and firearms, all of that into one. And then, you know, we kind of have our own niche of, we're big on the mindset of, you know, having the capability and training your mind and your mental your mental capacity, emotional intelligence, for getting into these types of situations that cops are encountering more and more every day. And I think it's kind of a miss in the law enforcement community. We talked about it. There's a lot of people that post stuff on online, on social media, YouTube, whatever, that I think veer out of their lane a little bit. We'll get into that. But that's kind of what we believe in. And that's kind of the culture that we're trying to embed in these cops when we come and train here is, you know, it's not all just about shooting and in one particular thing. Like if you don't have the mental wherewithal to even manage stress, everything else doesn't even matter. You got to get past that first step first.
Huge factors, right? And I think like what you guys as a podcast do well, whether it's a breakdown or it's emotional intelligence, is you're seeing a lack or a shortcoming in the profession and you're providing solutions, right? There's plenty of solutions, but you're providing something that's a solution from your experience or data that you're collecting and like studying. Mm-hmm. We do the same thing as far as bringing like DT in range into more of a reality-based training type situation, because that's where we see the solution is failing. Keeping gun stuff as a DT instructor separate. Like how many times you hear at your agency, I'm a gun guy.
Yeah.
I'm a DT guy. Yeah. Okay, but your gun problem becomes a hands-on problem at some point.
Yeah.
And my hands-on problem in less than a second can become a gun problem.
Well, yeah, because what cops forget is every encounter that you come into, whether it's physical or not, you're bringing a gun to the game.
Everyone.
Yeah. Every single one.
And so, we don't know the unknowns of what they have. We don't know what they have.
Yeah.
They might have multiple weapons, you know. Providing those solutions. And I always say, like, algebra or math is usually always correct. There's always an equation to solve something. And I've been using this like speech or like kind of like this little phrase of like, as cops, I think we do pretty well as a profession saying we need to create distance, right?
Yeah.
What does distance give us? Mm-hmm. Distance creates time. So now distance plus time equals better solutions, better decisions under stress, and more options.
Yeah.
What happens if we can't create distance? How do we get time? So not all situations allow us to create distance. So to get that time, when we can't create distance, we have to achieve dominant control. Because now that control gives us time, which then equals like better solutions, more options, better decisions under stress.
Yeah.
So it's like, we can't just say distance. Yeah, we want to disengage and get distance. Of course we do, because we know that that gives us time and we make better decisions there. But it's not always, we can't always create distance. So when lack of distance is there, then control fills that part of the equation to give us time to give us the better solutions.
Yeah. Yeah, no, totally. And something we talked about yesterday in our class is like, you know, I always say it in every class. I'm like, I hate to be the guy to say it, but sometimes we do this to ourselves when cops get killed or they get into some type of encounter where they either get seriously hurt. I'm like, we do it to ourselves sometimes because we rush into stuff without actually even knowing what we have or properly evaluating what it is that you're even going into. And there's videos out there everywhere that you can watch. And it's like, sometimes I feel like, well, that I don't feel like that should have had to have happened.
We talked about that Monday, me and you did.
Yeah.
When we first got in.
So I think that's something we really preach to people is, you know, give yourself that time and distance and evaluate what it is that you have. And what did I say yesterday in the class? I said, hey, what is something that is obviously out of our control that you're going to go in? You're not waiting around for a bunch of resources, right?
That was active.
And everybody says, yeah, the response was obviously active shooter. Okay. I say, can anybody give me anything different that you would just rush into something? And obviously there's certain circumstances where you might just say, you know what? I'm going to do this, right? Yeah. Because that's just the decision you chose to make. But the reality is, there's very few circumstances where cops need to just immediately rush into something.
Obviously, there's hit on the big one. The act of violence is
always
realistic. And that all just comes back to what is like the court relied on for years is the priority of life.
Yeah.
What's the priority of life? Like I teach vehicle extractions tomorrow. The number one thing I tell people, why am I reaching in that car if it can get mobile?
Mm-hmm.
What is the priority of life? If that guy can drive away when I'm reaching in the car, why am I reaching in the car?
Yeah.
Right? I don't reach in a car unless it's blocked in, it's immobilized, it's turned off, keys out. Now we have those fobs, completely different tactic now. Like you have to make sure the car's off, then the fob's out, because if you just put the fob out, some of these cars are electric.
Yeah.
When you take your foot off the gas, it doesn't sound like they're on. Mm-hmm. And they can throw the keys out, but then they can still drive away.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You can't even, you don't even know if they're on some of them.
Yeah. Right. So now you have to even be more precise in how you're going to reach in the car or knowing that it's off or disabled, right? So that's a safety consideration to be like, okay, he won't get out of the car for whatever the reason I'm pulling him out of. Why am I reaching in there if the keys are still on, car's on, and he could just hit it and drive away, and go away? What is the priority of life there?
Yeah.
Me?
Yeah, you, for sure.
Right? Act of violence is a civilian, so then if that's when we would maybe not wait for as many resources or backup. But besides that, there's very few circumstances where why aren't we slowing down?
Yeah.
The whole law enforcement breeds, for some reason, moving fast. But you look at it and you're like, why are we moving fast?
And I think that comes from like military training of, you know, action, violence, moving forward.
Yeah.
But in the civilian policing world, we have priorities of life that are a little bit different. And we don't always need to. Is there times where, sure, that is still a good tactic? I think there are times for that.
Yeah.
But not every time is that the answer.
Yeah.
Right? Like one time, there's a guy on social media who's like a troll. I won't mention his name, but I had posted a drill where I was up close to the target with a carbine. And on the call threat, I went backwards two steps, stayed on my toes, engaging two or three rounds, and then breaking lateral, getting off, and then reassessing the target. Just showing the drill like, oh, so response is close. I'm going to create space backwards initially. That's the only pro backwards has. And then I'm getting offline, moving, reassessing if I need more rounds or not more rounds. Mm-hmm. And he posted, never backwards. Always violence, force of action forward. Always drive down.
Yeah, that's just.
So I said, one, I said, okay, but if I initially had that response backwards, I want to stand my toe so my balance isn't compromised and I fall backwards and my shooting platform's weird and I want to work breaking my hips moving. And two, that might be a great tactic if it's just one guy, drive forward on him and drive down. But what if I have two suspects or three suspects? Now I'm going to drive down and give those guys the angle on me. Like maybe my best bet is I have cover four steps back and to the right. I want to start moving to that cover, right? So it's like, always and never in police work are the worst definitions ever.
They don't exist. That is an ignorant statement of somebody who's probably never even been shot at or had stimulus come towards me or towards him, because the reality is if someone is shooting at you, your first reaction is more than likely going to be backward. I'm sorry, but that is reality.
He's in the SF community. Like the guy's been in an SF community, you know, and he has like different pages that like aren't attached to him, but like that's who it was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, like you said too, like policing is different than military tactics. Yeah. So they can be integrated
for sure,
but they're not one of the same. They're different. Right. So,
and like you got like, there's high level military guys that have police experience and they understand the differences. There's high level SF guys that realize that, hey, I don't know everything about the integration, mm-hmm. and they're open to that. And I know one person like Doug, he was on the teams for 8 years, mm-hmm. but he'll ask like Trav sometimes question or me sometimes questions on uses of force or like maybe a certain different tactic as a police. He's not going to say that he knows everything. Mm-hmm. He understands there's a difference of integration. He wants to learn that too, because he teaches a lot of cops as well.
Yeah.
Right. Are they a great resource for us? Of course they're a great resource for us. You know how much I've learned from him just alone and like operating like a carbine and stuff. So like it all plays a factor, but we have to understand that how are we integrating things into training from the two different environments that we're training in?
Yeah, I think kind of going back to like what you were talking about with the vehicle situation, I think a lot of cops fail to realize, like they don't recognize like when do you have like a barricaded situation? And then if whatever your problem was, it is what it was, but now it's turned into a vehicle barricade. Example, someone not wanting to get out of a car. Okay. So even if you did maybe retreat or take a step back and take cover or whatever, like we have so many tools now in law enforcement to force somebody out of a vehicle. Yeah. I mean, you can launch a little gas round in there from a 40 mil, mm-hmm. That a lot of agencies carry now. I mean, pepper balls, you name it. There's ways to get people out of vehicles. Canines. Yeah. So there's plenty of ways to do it. I guess the point of that is getting cops to recognize like what it is that they're actually dealing with like right now.
And then being able to be flexible and then transition to, okay, now we have a different situation. Like, let's manage this.
And it's funny you say that because like the first part of like my vehicle extraction courses, or not just mine, but like the EFC model of vehicle extraction courses, is safety. And then when are we actually extracting someone in police work is not very often. Now it's more often on a traffic stop when we're already at the door. But if I'm approaching or I'm at the door and there's any threat from him of weapons, or we see weapons, why am I reaching in the car to drag him out anyways? That's just a barricade in a different environment. Instead of in a building, it's in a car.
Yeah.
So now it's like a felony stop or a high risk stop, whatever people call them. Okay.
Yep.
So understanding that not all the time am I extracting him out. If he's threatening to have a weapon, again, that's another safety consideration. I'm not reaching the car. Well, again, what's the priority of life? Why not get space, get behind your car, stacking pillars, whatever they're doing nowadays, and start calling them out at higher stops. It's changed now from a traffic stop to a barricaded person in a car versus I got to yank this dude out.
Yeah, exactly. Their mind automatically goes to, I got to yank this person out of the car. And there might be a time when you do that.
There are times, but again, like we have to understand when is the time versus when isn't.
Yeah.
And a lot of times I think like John Boyd's OODA loop. Okay. So we teach that in police work, mostly in tactics of CQB and stuff of, hey, when we're clearing, we want to OODA loop the bad guy. But cops OODA loop themselves on a daily basis.
Yeah.
So like when I was teaching at the academy in Western New York, and I teach DCGS and I teach EFC, I always say like in basic police work, let's just work on not OODA looping ourselves.
Yeah.
Right. So like you respond to a DV. Do I park in front of that house?
Yeah. No.
No. Why? Because if it goes bad, I have less time to observe, orient, decide, and act. Mm-hmm. Right. What if I park two houses down? Now, as I'm approaching, should I be running through like, hey, are the windows open? Is there anyone in a window? Is the door open? Any suspects? If it goes loud, where are my closest fallback points that are actually cover versus concealment? So now as I'm approaching already, I've already made those decisions if it has to happen, and I just got to act.
Yeah.
But if I roll right up in the house and jump out, then what I'm stuck with, I have to make those split second decisions. Look at the Cleveland shooting years ago. Was it the Tremere Rice one where there's a kid in a park?
Yep.
With a gun.
Yeah.
Right. And that ends up being a BB gun, but it looks like a gun. They don't know, right? It's, again, Graham Connor, it's not what we have hindsight, it's what they knew at the time. But was he in the level of force at the time? Yes. But what can we do better to provide solutions to make it better for one, law enforcement, okay, and for the suspects? Like, do you think that officer wants to live with shooting?
He was like 13.
He had to shoot a 13-year-old kid because he thought he was going to shoot him with a gun, right? But whose fault was that? Is his partner, the driver?
Oh, yeah, for sliding in.
You're rolling up to a park, and you know where the kid's at. It's funny because I had this exact same call about 5 years ago on the road when I was working patrol. And I'm going to a park, and the park actually was up a bit on a hill. I remember it was on the corner of Faulkner and Sturgis. And there's like a retaining wall, like 6 feet high, and the park was up there. So instead of coming to where the retaining wall was, I came down the other side so I could stop a house before. And then I got out of my car and I called him to me.
Yeah.
Put the gun down and call him to me. Because if he brings his gun up, can I solve that at a distance? Sure.
Yeah.
But if I roll right up and he like turns at me with that gun, I have to engage him right away. I don't have time to think, what is he going to do or not do? Right. So if that driver parks, stops that car 25 yards out, they flank to the back of the car, stack pillars, whatever they're doing for cover, and give him verbal commands, does he lift the gun still at him? Maybe. We'll never know, right? We're never going to know. But could that have been a form of de-escalation with really good tactics? Of course it is. And again, what'd they do? They didn't allow themselves time to observe, orient, decide, and act. They just had to act.
Yeah.
Because they put him so close.
Well, everything that you guys are saying, though, it comes back to your mindset and critical how do you train your, it's critical thinking. We talk about that in our classes, critical thinking, but you could train guns and pursuits and fighting, all this, but if you don't have the mindset, people lose their mind because they don't even know how to process that and how to manage it themselves. There's no class out there. Well, there are, but not specifically. People aren't taking them for their mind.
Yeah. I think too, like, you
academies don't even have that.
Yeah. Talking about like the DV call, cops got to get really good to it, recognizing if the call is what you're responding to, but then as you're making that approach and you actually have the wherewithal to, like, you know, look around your environment, yeah. you know, take everything in, right? I even say, like, take smell, all this in. If you recognize something that's out of play or out of character, and that little red flag goes up in your head, like, act on that. Yeah, don't just push that aside and go, whatever, I'm just going to go knock on the door. I mean, cops are dying constantly because they're right. not recognizing red flags, and they're just continuing to do what they're doing, and it's costing them.
It's just complacent mindset a lot of times too. Yeah. Or maybe it's they went to an academy that doesn't talk about this stuff.
Yeah, well, you have to change the culture. I remember when I started, you were it was cool and you were tough if you were the guy that walked up to the door, kicked the door open, grabbed someone, drug him out, or if you jumped a fence, like you were a stud. Yeah. And now it's like, you're crazy to do that. Like the cops that are processing things, taking their time, really looking at stuff, they're smart. And like, to me, that is way more valuable. Like that's a good cop is someone that's very smart and it's analyzing everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've noticed, not the assignment that I'm doing now because it's different, but when I was patrol, man, I would take every opportunity I could to even drop phone calls into people's homes, you know? Yeah. Like I don't like going into someone's house. Like it makes me uncomfortable. I don't know what's in there, especially on calls where their things or emotions already elevated. Those are really dangerous. And then you're inserting yourself into somebody else's problem and they don't want you there. Like, I don't know, just thinking outside the box a little bit. If I ever got dispatched to something where I just had this like weird feeling of maybe I didn't want to just walk up to that house, like drop a phone call and, right. and if you can, have someone step outside or, you know, create distance between suspects or victims or whatever. So
it's funny because you said smell and I'm thinking like, I approach houses before, I'd be like, I'm not going in the house. I'll call them out from the sidewalk. I mean, we deal with people whose hygiene would give most normal people nightmares.
Oh, disgusting. Yeah.
Right. So like, now why am I putting myself in the house with this cockroaches and bugs dropping down? Like just another reason to get them out of their house. Right. Yeah. If I can get them out of their comfort zone, come talk to me on the sidewalk. Come.
Yeah. Somewhere. And if they don't want to do it, that's a problem.
Right.
Why not? Yeah. Okay. Well, now I definitely don't want to go in that house.
I just saw the New York City one where they went into that guy's apartment, right? And then they get in a scruffle, he turns, yes. he takes the gun out and yeah. ends up shooting one of the cops. Cop lives. But like, again, a lot of this stuff could be solved prior to it happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's just, you know what it is? It's training.
Yeah. Yeah, it is, I know it is.
It comes back on administration and beyond administration, it comes back to like legislation. Mm-hmm. The people yeah. making what's mandatory for police to do. Civilians think that cops are trained robots. And that's farthest from the truth. Unless you're in a specialty unit, unless you're investing in yourself outside of work, you go to the academy and then you get very little training after that. Right? So like they want true police reform. Make legislation that mandates states that oversee DCGS posts. You need good, not just like PowerPoint, like desk thumping, yeah. like training. Like we need to put them in stressful situations earlier. We need to talk about movement, creating distance, good control, going from hands to less lethal, from less lethal to lethal, maybe going down the use of force too. Sometimes we're at lethal force and we get a behavior change and we can go down as well, right? But we need those people to be put in these stressful situations right away, right? So we're like Kathy was supposed to be here this week, but she wasn't, and she does a lot of the emotional intelligence. So we are going to do that with one of my classes. We're going to work doing that like as a test for them. And we had to cancel that for North, but we'll probably do it in either South or East, mm-hmm. right? And it's like these are the things that we need to start attacking because you guys know that stress and fear affect decisions.
Well, 100%.
Right? And there's realistically, and I'm not a doctor, I'm not a psychologist, but I've done enough research and like talked to people, like there's two places in your brain that you really get fear. There's like a frontal mm-hmm. lobe and then farther down the rear.
Yeah.
And like the SEALs do black hood drills. And that was brought about by tons of research that the military paid for. How can we get these guys making better decisions immediately under stress? Mm-hmm. And they do these black hood drills. So they're like, hoods come over, they can't hear anything, and then it pops up and it's, you gotta just react. You have no idea what the scenario is. So it could be a less lethal drunk guy and you just gotta like move him along. Mm-hmm. It could be the guy's trying to tackle you. It might be like you gotta start moving and engage in a gunfight. It might be a less lethal type thing. We don't do enough of that.
Yeah.
And that reality-based training, right? Really stressing like fear. So again, we talk about DT and range, bringing that together into a 360 environment is reality-based training. That's what it is. We just need to train more with stress. The more we put them in those situations, it's going to slow down for them, right? They're going to process faster. It's like the game slows down. I tell people, you come to jiu-jitsu class as a white belt and you go with like a brown or a purple or black belt, and it just feels like I'm lost. I don't, it's just too, I can't process what's going on. I'm just completely getting transitioned on and beat up. Okay. Not beat up per se, because the higher level belts are just going to like continue to move.
You guys beat people up.
And, and, but the same is for tactics, right? Yeah. The same thing happens. There's an awesome video from 2022 where they have a guy on the road. He's got a knife and they got less lethals out. They got guns out and the guy starts charging at him and they're unloading guns. They're unloading, I think it was pepper ball or some sort of less lethal. There might have been 40 millimeter, some sort of less lethal tasers. The guy empties his mag on his handgun. Guy goes down. He's behind his door as cover at lockback for 21 seconds. Wow. And then the dude gets up and starts to run again. Ugh. And then you see him pull the trigger, and then he has to fix a reload because they don't put them in those after actions, right? Like train stress and train after actions of like, okay, an action just occurred. What should I be checking? Should I be moving as a suspect down? Is he alone? Am I okay? And is my gun up and running? Whether it's empty, it's got a malfunction, it got shot, whatever. Like we have to just be better at how we do training from the academy and then continuous off after the academy. We don't do that in police work. Like, no. Oh, post mandates 21 hours of training. Okay, well, I've been, and I was in an agency that eventually we got to be really proactive. We trained a lot, way more than anybody else was training. So like it was, we benefited. And I saw from the time we started doing that and we were training continuously, how even the guys that don't train outside of work were so much better when we were doing really based training drills. And then watching them in the street and being partners with them and seeing how they were reacting, they were doing so much better at not rushing, being calm, making better decisions. And so we can train it. We just got to do it.
Yeah, because, I mean, when you get that stress, adrenaline dump and all that cortisol dumping in your body, like your brain is going to take over and do some funky things for you. If you haven't conditioned your brain to even manage stress and be able to take that adrenaline and bring that surge down like a little bit faster to be able to process like what is even going on, you are never going to be able to make an accurate, concise decision on what to do. And so that is why we are so heavily focused on being able to critically think and make a decision. You know, I said it yesterday. I'm like, I really don't care that you have a $500 red dot optic on your gun. Right. Cool. I know that's a cool thing to have. I get it. Or some sexy, you know, pistol that you paid $2,000 for. I'm not a gun guy. I never have been. It's, you know, neither is he. But if you want to buy those things, that is up to you. But if you think that is going to make you better or save you in a situation where it's literally life and death and somebody is trying to kill you and shoot at you, I mean, very few people say it. I say it. Like, I think you're dead wrong. Like, you just are. It doesn't happen like that.
The long gun. Let's talk about the long gun. It's got optics on it.
Sure.
It's one of the most accurate weapons we have, right? It's more accurate than the pistol. It's easier to be accurate with it. The long gun fails because people don't know how to manipulate their weapon during stress and during movement, right? Like, my 17 and 18-year-old daughter, let's go back 5 years ago, when they're 12 and 14 or whatever, shooting it. They're accurate, super accurate, because they're sitting posted on a table or standing up, and the long gun's accurate. Where do we see people miss up with the long gun is just weapon manipulation. Now the pistol's even more difficult. And we have, most ranges don't have a 270 environment that they can shoot 270 and move, right? So now we're stuck shooting mostly static on a flat range. And it's difficult because my one friend, I wish I could like say I came up with this term, but I did not. And he calls those guys target instructors, guys that just have everyone stand still and just squall standing still on targets. He's like, those guys are target instructors.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, you have to move. What is police work? Movement, 360 environment. So if we're training so safe and just on a flat range, what do you think we're going to act like when we get into a fight?
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
I don't think I moved in the academy. Can you remember ever moving everything was stagnant shooting with the exception of stepping to the left or
to the right. Be like one, maybe like one step to the left or to the right.
Everything was stagnant. Yeah. And even all the way up until I went to SWAT, everything was stagnant. Right. And it was like, they'd yell at you and you're like, and you're just like, dude, this is not practical at all.
Yeah. Well, and so look, I'm not saying that having those things is not an advantage to you because it clearly can be.
Yeah.
The point is if you can't operate under stress and manipulate that stuff.
You gotta be able to operate and manipulate the weapon.
Then
that's training.
Yeah, then you might as well not have it.
Correct.
That's the whole point. And so just because you do, it's not gonna make you better.
No.
So I guess that's the whole point behind it. We were talking about social media. Mark, I know you're so heavily involved in social media and love it so much.
Basically a professional.
I don't even tag him in anymore because he like barely puts anything on there. I'm like, you won't even see this. I just tag Shots Fired podcast instead.
So, but there's a lot of, you know, we're obviously involved in social media and there's a lot of people with pages out there that I'm not going to mention any of the pages, but putting some stuff out there where I'm like, where are you getting this? Like, where is this coming from? What is your experience to even be putting this stuff online? Because some people, they follow that stuff and they think that some of the stuff that these guys are putting out is like the way to do it. And it's like, and then it's causing controversy, right? Between some of these bigger pages and there's a lot of back and forth and it's almost getting to the point where it's like kind of silly. And then, but one of the pages, like he's been very aggressive with like, it's his way or no way. And everybody else is kind of stupid. And, but then he takes away the ability to like comment, deletes everybody that, you know, posts something negative against what he's saying. And so it's like, dude, if you're going to put stuff out there, like if you're going to put everybody else down and it's your way, then give people the opportunity to at least give their opposition. Like don't strip that ability. Like you can't say, you know, platforms shouldn't be censoring you, like, you know, YouTube and all these things. Like, we know how that works and Instagram.
Right.
But now you're censoring your own content. Like, you're not allowing people to even comment and you're deleting things that people are putting on your platform.
And we got to think, like, tactics as an overall is controversial.
It's always going to be controversial.
Always controversial because there's sometimes more than one way or one solution to solve one things. Right?
So according to some people.
Yeah.
Now, if you can say, hey, this is the why I think this is the best solution. Okay. And if you say, I don't agree with that, you're an adult. You have the right to not agree with that. Yeah. That's fine. Why are we going to argue about it? All right, I don't need to argue. Okay. You're an adult. Make your own opinion. That's fine. Yeah. This is why we teach it this way, because the why of what's behind it. If Mark says, oh, I would do it this way, and doesn't violate any of my concepts or principles of why I'm doing it, okay, it's just a different way of doing it. That's fine. I actually had this conversation with a student today for lateral head displacement. He's like, you cross-face the head across. I'm like, yes. He goes, every time I do that, I slip off. And when you're going too fast or like maybe just your arm shorter or whatever, he's like, this is what I do. I go, are you moving the head to the side? You're not like gouging his eyes out or covering his mouth. Yeah. Okay. Then all right, that's fine. You can do it that way.
Good work. Yeah. Right? If it works for you,
now,
go ahead.
If he's like, I'm going across the neck or I'm pulling the guy by his eyes, I'm like, okay, yeah,
that's can't do that.
Probably not what we would advise to do. But again, you're an adult and just don't tell people I told you to do that.
Yeah. Well, I just think if you're going to be putting content out there online, like back it up, like at least put out what you like, where it is that you learned this, or like what is your experience to even be putting this stuff out.
That's a big thing. I think, what is your experience and where is the source of the data?
Yeah, fine. And then it's fine. Cool. Like as long as you provide that, but if you're just spewing this information and then not backing any of it up, it's kind of like, well, dude, of course you're going to get people that are going to be questioning you. And then to be censoring that, then it just becomes kind of a joke at that point.
Yeah.
So,
and I'm a data nerd. I really am a data nerd. Like I love backing stuff up with data, but we all know numbers can be tweaked to kind of like fit the narrative of what we want.
Yeah.
Okay. So like you have to be careful what data you're taking. Like, is it a neutral data report? Like I use this knife study from Fit and Fearless. And the reason I use that one is because they're not trying to prove any tactics one side or the other. They're just saying, here's 150 knife attacks. Some of them are against cops. Most of them are against other civilians. Mm-hmm. But what does it look like? Okay. What is the bad guy doing? Okay. Versus how is the victim reacting? Okay. Well, what does that tell us? Now, when we're drilling this, we should probably have our bad guy doing what we're seeing those bad guys do at 3/4 of the time or more. Most of the stats are like 70% or higher, this, this, and this. Mm-hmm. So if the bad guys are doing that, and we come into the room and I can see the knife coming and you just lunge nice and slow at me, I'm getting no reps, zero, because that's not what I'm ever going to see. I'm going to be on the eight ball. But if I say, okay, 70-some percent of the time, you don't see the blade until it's launched, and 70% of that time, I'm within 3 feet. Okay? So now we should probably be drilling at that pace.
Yeah.
And we should be drilling at not seeing the blade. So why don't I start facing away from you? You can have the knife. You can switch it in hands. You can come over top, underneath. I don't know where it's coming from. So now when I turn, I'm within 3 feet, and I have to try to act and intercept that weapon or move if I'm not being held, right? So now I'm starting to train using our drill partners is what the data is showing that we're seeing on the street in real knife fights. So look at the one we saw in New Mexico. That was brutal to watch.
Gosh, that was horrible.
When does he see the knife?
Way too late. Wait, he was already within on the ground.
Like probably 3-4 feet.
Yeah.
Doesn't see it till it's attacked. And what's he do? He starts to go backwards and then turns his hips 360 and falls.
Yeah.
Data from that study shows, okay, the majority of people are going to go backwards and 40% of those people fell to the ground. Every knife fight you watch in police, you can look at this study and you'll be like, yep, yep, yep. It's crazy. So that's why I use that study because it fits so good. My buddy Nate, who's trained some reality-based training courses with us, he's retired now. He worked for a really small department. They had like two officers on, and he went to backup fire department on what was a male having a seizure. Huh. And the guy had a suicide note in the car, went to see his old girlfriend at a college. And he's knocking on the door. The fire department asked him to try to make contact. The guy opens the door. He'd already carved out a portion of like his heart, punctured a lung prior to coming out of the door. The whole bathroom was covered in blood. Nate starts to move and moves and draws. Doesn't draw and then move. He's moving and drawing because he's at the top of a suicide staircase. Runs all the way down the stairs, breaks the port side, one hand shooting. The guy's chasing him. Nate probably tried to de-escalate longer than most people would have. He gave him a while, but he also was creating distance, so he had time because he was moving properly. Engages two rounds to the box. The guy like stumbles, hits a wall, and then comes back at him again. Nate continued to move. Two more rounds. Subject goes down, follows him down, keeps space, gets resources there, whatever. But you watch that video, and it's he doesn't see the knife. He's on the other side of the door. The guy opens the door. That's when he sees the knife. Last minute, within 3 feet, and in a confined space.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like that's how these are happening. If I see a person with a knife 15 feet away, that's a different situation.
Yeah, for sure.
Wow.
Yeah, I had a buddy at work get stabbed, and he says, yeah, he never saw it.
Yeah.
Never even saw it coming. Yeah. And he thought he got punched until he realizes he's leaking blood everywhere. Yeah. And, you know, didn't he realize he got stabbed until after the fact?
One of my best friends who I field trained, that's probably why he's the deputy chief now, because his field training officer was so amazing. But I met him because I field trained him in 09, okay? And he, intelligent kid, like collegiate athlete, like just real smart, like tactical, worked his way up, was a team leader on the SWAT team, sergeant, lieutenant, captain, and then just recently promoted to deputy chief. And he was a lieutenant, and it was like a suicide kid that ended up the kid's 40 something. Mm-hmm. So mom's like grandma age. And as soon as they get there, he takes the mom hostage with the knife. So now it goes from a suicide person to fucking hostage with a knife, right? And he had young guys with him. He had a field trainer, but it was a young field trainer who had a guy on training and then another like guy just off probation. That was his crew because he was working the 3-11 shift and that's what he had, right? Immediately from him. He called for SWAT right away. But again, SWAT response is 30 to 40 minutes out in a part-time assignment, right?
So if you're lucky.
If you're lucky. So, anyways, he saw the opportunity to get mom away because the bad guy wanted water. Mm-hmm. So bad guy's holding mom and knife. So he's like, the guy wants water. He's like, all right, I'll hand him it. And when he does, I'm just going to either grab mom or I'm going to attack the knife hand. And he yanked her out, grabs the knife hand, whips the guy down, and then starts to disengage. And what do you think the new guy said?
Engaged?
Engaged.
With him on the... With him on the suspect?
No, with him disengaging the suspect. So he threw the suspect in the ground, like, let's get out. Mom's out.
Yeah.
Do this as a barricade or get distance. The What do you think one of the new guys did? Just not knowing any better. They're new.
Yeah.
Starts to engage him. So he's like, oh, and sees the guy reaching for the knife. And Scott has to go re-engage and didn't know it, but took the knife all the way through the hand. Ugh. He didn't know he's walking out. And the paramedic's like, hey, you're bleeding. And he's like, oh, and then he was stabbed all the way through and through.
Yeah.
He's like, I didn't even know I was stabbed.
Yeah, you don't know it.
Didn't know.
I just think it comes back to training. I mean, it's just, there's just not enough of it.
There yeah, needs to be that's it.
Well, and
that's
I think we were sitting here talking about like guys putting some stuff out on social media content. But I would just say this: if you're watching or listening to this, and you're using some of these platforms to get training, which is awesome. I think that's cool. I just say like vet out who it is that you're you're getting this training from. Like just either fact check them or go do some vetting on who they are. I would strongly encourage anybody that listens to us or goes to any of our classes, like fact check us, you know, ask us questions, find out what our background is. You know, like we are an open book and we are not always right. You know, like we all make mistakes.
Sure.
And we are very open-minded to hearing a different way of doing things. So I think what it comes down to, honestly, is some of these people need to just stay in their lane and stop branching so far out of your own lane to pretend like you're an expert in literally everything, because you're not.
Yeah, have an open mind. Check your ego. Always look to be better. Always look for possible other solutions. It's the way to go. Like vetting out, I just had this conversation in my last two courses because people are like, hey, we want to host. But there's a course close to us, so we're going to send one of our main instructors there to vet you out. Or they don't say that, but that's what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And I talked to the instructor actually when I was in Idaho. So Spokane Sheriff's Office wants to host us and they sent like their brown belt instructor to take the course. And I'm like, you know what? I would do the same thing.
That's good. Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
Totally.
Come check it out. Because I know if you come, I know the content and how we deliver it, like they're going to want to host us, right? So I welcome that. Come. And then you know what? Maybe we're not for them. Okay. That's fine too.
Yeah. And what I also like about that is, look, don't just, sometimes people like will hire instructors or some training platform or whatever, because they're just like super popular on social media. Yeah. They know nothing about their backgrounds or anything, but they're super popular. And so they're like, I got to go to that training or I got to host them out here. Right. Well, it's like, well, dude, I love the fact that they sent them out there. You guys are super popular. You guys have blown it up. Like you guys are everywhere, which is super awesome. We know you.
Right.
We know the content you're putting out.
Yeah, I think definitely vetting your training providers is huge. And we're growing fast. We're a new company.
Yeah.
So like our brand awareness isn't even known like to the majority of police departments. Majority of police departments I talk to are like, hey, we heard about you, but who are you guys? This and that. Now, the good thing is I've been building curriculum since like 2010-11 for my PD, building curriculum for TAC Ops, building curriculum for, you know, gyms, and now building curriculum for the state since 2015 in New York. So like I've made my name like in New York and around the area. So it's not that EFC is new. It's not that me building curriculum is new, but people all don't know me. So a lot of my conversations, what do we do? What do we provide? How do we do that? And I tell people, hey, these are the courses. Come vet us, see what we're like, see what we do. We do things a little bit differently. We are really huge into integrating the fundamentals of like wrestling and jujitsu and striking into what we actually do as law enforcement. And I welcome that. I want them to come, you know why? Because I know what the content is. I know that all my instructors are capable of the delivery. And I know all my instructors are above the standard basically, right? Otherwise I wouldn't have them working for me. And I want them to vet us. I would rather them come vet me.
I totally agree.
If someone doesn't want you to come vet them, there's probably an issue.
That would be a huge, that should be a major red flag.
Yeah. And I always will say, like, I urge administrations to be like, hey, we want a Zoom call with you. Tell us what you're about. Tell us how you do things. I spend tons of calls like that. I actually made a PowerPoint presentation. So if they don't want a Zoom call, I can send them the PowerPoint presentation of what do you get for hosting and why should you host EFC?
Yeah. Yeah. And at the end of the day, they either choose to do it or they don't, because it doesn't meet the needs of their department.
And you know what? Then they choose to go another route.
Oh, fine.
It's fine. There's plenty of work out there for everybody. And it's just, I hope that training overall as a whole gets better, because we do know that there's a lot of training providers out there that aren't good. There's a lot of instructors out there that have certs and aren't good.
Yeah.
And that's what we got to change. Like, we want true police reform. It's got to make, we have to have better instructors. We have to have better content. We have to have like really good training. And that just isn't tactics. That encompasses the stress and fear portion of it, the mindset portion of it, and then the tactics portions of it, right? And then skills, like especially in DT. If I have a guy that's skilled, that doesn't mean he's tactical. Yeah. I've seen black belts come to class and they make terrible mistakes, get their gun taken or get a girl parties on them. They're like, why? Because they're doing a Kimura and leaving the other hand blank and they're committing two hands on one side of the body and their head to that side of the body. And now the guy's like stabbing him with a knife or taking his taser and shooting him in the head.
Yeah.
Right. But if that black belt has skill or that person has skill, showing him the integration and changing his tactics, it's so much easier. Take a shooter, good grip, good sight picture, good trigger presses, and teaching him how to move is going to be easy. Teaching the guy that has no good shooting fundamentals, terrible grips, terrible trigger press, like now to get him moving and shooting is a disaster.
Yeah.
You got to build his skills first before you teach his tactics.
Yeah, I think what people don't see behind, you know, the social media stuff and in the YouTube and stuff is like all the hard work that goes into trying to change the culture of law enforcement. I mean, this stuff is a grind. I mean, doing this podcast and doing editing and social media and, you know, all the training curriculum that we put together, like it's a grind. And a lot of work goes into it. And, you know, for a long time, you're not making any money. You're dumping money into these into these things. And so, you know, that's why I value what you guys are doing, dude. You know, that's why we always link up here at the TAC Ops and hang out. But same mindset. I know that you guys do a lot of freaking hard work. And I know it took a lot of hard work to get to where you're at. So I think if we just, I don't know, keep on this train and keep pushing forward, I think we're providing a lot of good value to a lot of young cops, honestly. Yeah. You know, we get a ton of young cops who either are wanting to go to the academy, in the academy, or they're on FTO, constantly message us, you know, either thanking us for putting this stuff out because it's almost like they're using it as like their training. Mm-hmm. I value that. Like, that's why we keep doing this. Cause if we don't,
they don't have the resources. When we started, social media wasn't huge.
No,
like you don't have all this different resources you can reach out to. Now there's pros and cons to that because there is bad material that's put out there. But like, again, if you're vetting it, there's resources on almost anything you need to become better as a police officer.
Yeah,
but it's out there.
But but if the guys that have a good grasp on like doing good and good training, like we have to put this content out there because like you said, if we don't, then the other people who are training bad content, then they're the ones putting it out. So I don't know. I guess it's just always having to stay relevant. And
I always say like I don't want to be away from my family and my house.
I know
3 weeks out of the month.
I know
like that's not an ideal situation. But there's a huge gap, and if our true mission is to make the best solution for cops, we got to grind until it's. I have enough instructors up and running where I can limit going to all the courses. And right now, that's just not the time yet. But it's not like I'm a titanium member at Marriott. I spend over 100 nights in a hotel a year. That's not ideal.
No.
Right? I don't do that for fun.
No.
I would much rather be waking up tomorrow morning and taking my kids to school.
Yeah.
Instead, I don't see them till the weekends, right? But what is the mission? What would we set out to do? And that's provide better solutions. So like that's what we're doing.
Yeah, I think it's always just having goals. Like we always have goals that we're trying to set, and then like what is the mission of like what it is that we're even doing?
Yep.
I don't know. We believe in it. I believe in it. You're right. There's a lot of traveling and sacrificing. Yeah. We're always on the road. I feel like flying around. So
right. And then when you go home, you're still working. So you go home now. You're going back to work.
Yeah,
right?
We're working full time jobs.
I go home now and I have 40 hours of emails to catch up on or meetings to catch up on. So like it's always a grind, but you guys are passionate. We're passionate about it. That's why we like-minded individuals. And the more we do that, the more we put out, hopefully the culture changes.
Yeah. I think so. You know? So, well, dude, it's always fun hanging out with you here and your crew at the TAC Ops. Jay and his crew is always the life of the party for sure. And then second is Mark, but you've been sick lately. Yeah. Shoot, I got sick when I got here. I was like, dang it, man.
Yeah.
But no, it's been a blast here. If you guys are looking to want to sign up for any training courses involving some of the things that we just talked about, you can go to savagetraininggroup.com. Mark and I host a class, Patrol Survival Tactics. Been getting really good feedback on that, which has been really nice. So if you'd like to host a class, you can go on the website and request to get hosted. How do people get signed up with your guys' stuff?
EFCcombatives.com or our Instagram page is EFCombatives, and it's got links to all the courses.
Okay. Nice.
Losing my voice from teaching.
Yeah, you
so
all
much.
Right, dude?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's it. That's a wrap then.
Jay's done. Yeah, getting put in too many chokeholds or what?
No, I just losing my voice and I had to cough. And
all right.
Got nervous. Thanks for coming. Yeah. Thanks for stopping by, dude.
Dude, it's always fun. Like, you guys, you know, support us. We support you. And, that's what we need to do more is support each other, support other companies, and just realize, like, if you're on the same mission and you're putting out good stuff, not arguing and fighting with each other, but just being like, there's enough work for everybody.
Yeah, the bickering is so
the
silly.
Amount of training that needs to be done, one company can't do the training for the whole country. Like, I would never be able to handle that as a business to provide training for everybody in the country. Mm-hmm. There's just multiple different solutions or multiple different companies. And I say, like, as long as they're relevant and they're teaching good stuff, like, bad mouthing each other and fighting
it's,
and stuff.
It's silly.
It's just silly and it's not.
Yeah, we stay 100% out of it. You know, obviously we see it, but we don't get involved in it.
Yeah.
Professionally, I just don't think you should. First of all, if you're running a business, but
yeah, and that's the thing. Like, it's just
and take little bits.
Worry about you.
Yeah, like take little bits of whatever you're seeing on different platforms. Like, if you like the way somebody's doing something, like take a bit of that. Take a bit of somebody else's. Like,
sure. And you know, like Jay didn't develop all this stuff like just on his own. I get stuff from my other instructors. I get stuff from people I trained in the past. Like, a lot of my gun stuff, I learned with running with like the PFC crew, your Dougs and Travs and those guys that were spending a ton of time on guns that had different ways of looking at it. And it was like, all right, some of this stuff's good. I'm gonna take this stuff. And it's made me a better operator. It's made me, when I was in SWAT, made me a better teacher, right? Surrounding myself with guys that might be better than me in a different lane. Mm-hmm. And then in DT, sure. Surrounding yourself with people that have just as good a knowledge of you. I mean, I spent a long time with Chad Lyman from C4C. And I'm sure he would say the same thing. Like, we both learned from each other too, you know, and his company is great. Our company is there. They're a little bit different. There's a lot of similarities, but we spent 5-6 years together. Right. So understand that. And there's different looks at, like, hey, do we want control tactics? Do we want combatives? Like, what's the better name for it? And some places do more control tactics where we're more of like a combatives, like full spectrum. Like, I really deep dive into like weapon-based entanglements and tactics in that portion of it. But that's just because that was my experience in work, right? Like, I had more experience there. So I really know like the importance of that. And then you have like less lethal. But I think all that is in one situation. So that's why I teach what we do for our level one.
Yeah, love it. Nice. All right. Well, shoot, man. Let's go down to the dinner that we're supposed to have tonight and go have a little bit of fun. We'll catch you guys on the next show.
Thanks, guys.